This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, we are talking about tofu.
Yes, and I have a cold. And that's why I sound like this.
Mm-hmm. Tis the season. It's also Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, Happy New Year, everyone. Oh, wow, yeah.
Hope you don't have a cold.
Hope you don't have the cold that I got from Molly. So here's my seasonal cold and flu prevention tip. Don't co-host a podcast with someone who has a young child and pass food back and forth while, like, licking it and taking bites off it all the time.
Yeah. I always lick stuff that, but, like, when I'm tasting it before I pass it to Matthew, I just give it, like, a good, like, a tongue lathering.
Yes. The level of lathering is literally obscene.
Yeah. Anyway. So, Happy New Year, everybody. We hope that you got through the holidays without the cold that we have had.
Yep.
And I feel like this is a great time of year for cooking these, like, fantastic, like, Szechuan tofu dishes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, any time of the year is great for that. But I'm really glad we're doing this episode now because, oh my God, this is episode number 418.
Yeah.
And I can't believe we haven't done tofu yet.
I know that we say that, like, every week. I can't believe we haven't done this yet. The entire remaining run of the show, the next 2,000 episodes, everyone is going to start with, I can't believe we haven't done this topic yet.
The show really pulls me emotionally back and forth because I go on the one hand from feeling like, oh my God.
I have to sit with Matthew and he's going to lick something and pass it to me again.
I don't have any more topic ideas for this show. Like, on the one hand, I feel that way regularly. And then on the other hand, I'm like, I can't believe we didn't think of this. Like, there are so many good things left to talk about.
Yeah, and in fact, next week's episode is one of those also. Sneak preview.
Mm-hmm. There's so many good things left to lick and pass to Matthew.
Yep. So thanks for listening to Lick and Pass. it's like Lick-A-Made, but, like, for friends.
Have you ever gone to Lick and Pass and gone skiing?
Yes, it was very satisfying.
Oh, what, man, the Black Diamond Run there is treacherous.
Yeah, but it's what happens back at the lodge that you'll remember forever.
Okay. All right.
All right. What are we talking about again?
Let's go down tofu memory lane.
Okay. So my tofu memory lane doesn't go back far as I feel like it should, because it really took me, like, later in life than is really appropriate for me to realize that tofu is, like, a food that I could get excited about.
What do you mean by later in life?
My mid 90s.
Your mid 90s.
No, probably the mid late 90s.
Okay, so you were in your late 20s.
Maybe. Yeah.
I think this sounds totally standard for a white American.
Right. And so before that, like I had the idea that many Americans not of Asian descent do, which is that tofu is a substitute for something and or like a punchline synonym for a bland food.
Yeah. And I think that this was particularly a prevalent idea in the wake of like, you know, all the vegetarian books that came out like around the time that you and I were born, probably late
like 70s. Moosewood,
all these things. Tofu was presented as this sort of like ascetic food, almost.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Which it certainly can be, but does not have to be.
Absolutely not. And I think that actually, so around the same time that you were having your tofu awakening.
Yes.
I was in college probably at that point. So, because as everyone will remember, I'm 3 years younger than Matthew.
Yes.
It matters. I remember my senior
year. Guess what? We're both at least 40 now. It no longer matters.
I know. Matthew, God, I'm joking. I think you're feeling sensitive about this.
I know you're
this.
Joking, and yet, like, I keep having these, like, very embarrassingly stereotypical middle-aged nostalgia pangs where, like, I wake up in the night thinking, like, I wish I could go back and do such and such over. I would do a better job this time.
Which
what
is would you
do? The dumbest feeling to have. I think I would have, like, gotten better at singing and playing guitar and like stuck with those things more consistently. That's the one I've been revisiting this week. Next week it'll be something different.
What I was just thinking about this week. Well, so hold on. First, let me give you a glimpse of how middle-aged I've become.
Please.
Last night we were watching that new, well, probably by the time this airs, no longer very new Martin Scorsese film on Netflix,
The Irishman.
We were finishing it last night and I was knitting a scarf.
Okay.
While
did you fall asleep a couple times?
No, but Ash was falling asleep. Anyway, okay, but I just the other day was totally thinking about how like so I had a very hold on. We're going to talk about making out.
Some okay, great.
I mean, and by some more, I mean like in the history of the show, we've talked about making out a fair amount.
Yeah, like every 5 or 6 episodes. Okay, I think.
What I wanted to say is that I had a very unsuccessful dating career in college. Mm-hmm. As listeners and readers of Matthews will know, he met Wotzel, wife of the show Lori, in college.
Yes.
So Matthew,
that's pretty successful.
Matthew was very successful in college in terms of dating.
I guess. I mean, like, it depends how you define success.
Anyway,
didn't go on lots of dates in college.
I think that probably most of our listeners would agree that like a really satisfying and like hot and fulfilling relationship is like true success.
Yeah, that's one definition.
Okay, great. Anyway, I had no success by any definition, okay? I lost my virginity in college, but other than that, like, I was scared to ask people out.
Oh, sure.
Anyway, but here's the thing. Like, I write about this in my forthcoming book.
The Fixed Stars, which you can pre-order now?
I had this one date with a woman that I was very confused about. Like,
sure.
I couldn't tell if it was a date. Like, I think I genuinely didn't know it was a date when it
began. Until it was too late.
And anyway, but I now think to myself, oh my God, I think everything would have been different if I would go to if I were going to college right now when kids, at least in coastal cities, are like just making out with everybody.
Yeah, it does seem that way.
I mean, but I think that people were doing this when I was in college.
They were.
Oh my God, what would it have been like if like some
I
like,
don't know though. You went to college in sort of a backwards rural area. Stanford, California.
Yeah, that Palo Alto place is super rural. Definitely no computers there. Anyway, but no, I just kept thinking, like, what if some young, like, budding lesbian had, like, come on to me in a way that I could not fail to notice?
Right.
And if I had actually had the guts to take it seriously and be curious about it, what would my life have looked like? And how much fun could I have had, like, just fucking in college, which I did not do?
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, I guess you're right that by that standard, like I do feel like I was successful enough in college that I don't like think back of like, you know, I wish I'd like, you know, screwed around more in college.
Yeah. Well, and I also think that early straight sex experiences were tinged with so much Well, all early sex experiences are tinged with weirdness.
Oh, sure.
But especially like, do you have a condom? Learning how to put on a condom, you know, like like being afraid of diseases and stuff. I wonder, I mean, like, obviously people like with two vaginas who are having intercourse need to think about illnesses too.
Yes, but not to the same
extent.
But
not pregnancy. Right. And I was very afraid of pregnancy.
Oh, sure. Why
would
you be?
What would it have been like to, like, not be afraid of that in my early sexual experiences?
Well, I mean, I guess it's not too late, right? I mean, it's too late to go back and redo things.
It is too late. But now I'm not afraid of pregnancy anymore. Yeah, okay, it's pretty great. Go. Yeah. Anyway, so let's talk about tofu.
Yeah, no, we've talked about this before, like that on the show. I think that I thought of myself in college as like the biggest nerd that no woman could possibly be interested in.
I thought of myself as the biggest. I had this strange complex of feeling like I was pretty cool, but that I was only cool in my universe of one, and that the whole rest of the world could see straight through me and see that I knew nothing.
Yeah, no, I didn't think I was cool at all. And, like, you know, did barely ever, like, had the guts to ask someone out because of that. And then, but looking back on it, like, I was the lead singer in a band, in a rock band that would, like, play shows around campus and around Southern California. And probably, like, that, like, whatever my other deficiencies, that was probably cool enough.
Mm-hmm. You had long hair.
And I had long hair.
You had a lot of hair.
Yeah.
I remember reading your description of Lori in Hungry Monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about how hot she was, like this hot girl,
yeah,
like
true.
Like she was super like into you and you couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I just
still
love
can't believe it.
Like picturing that because I know how nerdy you looked in college and I know how much of a lesbian I looked like in college. And yet like the rest of the world didn't think you were a nerd. And
I mean, probably a lot of it did.
And I think I had no idea what a lesbian I looked like.
Sure.
I wasn't a lesbian.
Yeah.
It's, oh my God. Growing up is so hard.
Okay, so sometime in the 2000s, I was writing restaurant reviews. This is actually pivoting back to tofu now.
Oh.
At like the 12-minute
mark.
Oh,
wait a minute. I wasn't done talking about my memory lane.
Yep, yep.
So my senior year of college, I lived in this apartment on campus with my best friend Keaton, who also kind of looked like a lesbian and also wasn't a lesbian. She was so cool. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Keaton continues to be so cool. Keaton plays in rock bands.
Yeah. And,
oh my God,
and she started
so
Birdman
cool.
and
what?
Batman.
Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm sure she's never heard that one before.
She actually usually refers to Buster Keaton.
Oh, sure.
To explain her name.
Was Buster Keaton the great stone face? I don't either.
Anyway, but so Keaton and I lived in this like super dumpy apartment complex on campus that I'm pretty sure has now been torn down.
Is it a super fun site?
Matthew, shut up. Anyway, and it was our senior year. And when you live in that building, like most people in it don't have a meal plan and they cook their own meals.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So I already, you know, was pretty interested in cooking and Keaton wanted to learn. And so we did a lot of cooking. And anyway, I remember a lunch that I was really into was I would get firm tofu. This sounds so weird and bad. I would get firm tofu and I would cut a slice off the block, like a slice about as big as like a slice of sandwich bread.
Sure.
Okay. And I would marinate it for like 30 minutes in some like Stubbs beef marinade.
Nice.
Yeah. Like you're supposed to like put on beef. And then I would put it in a skillet and I would cook it just until it was sort of like hot and a little bit browned.
That sounds pretty good to me, frankly.
And then I would put it on like whole wheat sandwich bread and smear one of the slices with avocado.
I mean, I get
lunch.
Why this is embarrassing, and yet it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty classy in college, and yet it's so random. It was my like weird tofu sandwich with avocado. It was weird. But anyway, I really did not, it did not occur to me that tofu could be used for anything other than like meat replacement,
right,
or quote unquote healthful eating. Mm-hmm. Until I moved to Seattle and, you know, got far enough outside of Northern California,
right?
To get to eat some really good Asian food,
right? Okay,
I mean,
so,
there's really good Asian food in Northern California, but there's also a lot of hippies.
Yes, there's both. Yeah, like every time I go to Berkeley, which I love to do and haven't been in a few years, I always marvel at, like, oh, there are like real deal hippies here.
Oh my God, straight up.
That like fulfill every possible hippie stereotype, and I love it.
Well, and like, you know, the legend of, like, you know, encountering like a naked guy walking along Telegraph right. Avenue, like, it's not a legend. It will happen to
yes.
you.
My favorite thing that I've ever heard said about hippies, and I'm not going to like get the delivery of the joke right, but that I was listening to a podcast where I think it was a TV writer and comedian Nick Adams was talking and saying, like, you know, for all of these stereotypes about hippies, many of which are true, the thing is, they were right about pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. So
I remember, oh my God, hold on, I'm almost done here, Matthew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
it's okay. Well, it's okay to start the show at minute 15.
A really high point for me in college.
Yeah.
This is also telling, is that Molly Katzen,
yeah.
the author of the Moosewood Cookbook and many other legendary vegetarian cookbooks, so not only did I write a letter to her in college, and she wrote back to me.
What was in the letter? Tell me everything.
I sent her an essay that I had written.
Okay.
And she read it. And,
about
and
what?
It was about, oh my gosh, it was about some writer and like the symbolism of sugar in a novel of theirs.
Why? But why did you send it to her?
Well, I'm getting to that. So she had a new book that came out when I was in college. And I remember I got myself to San Francisco and I went to her reading. And it was like major celebrity moment mm-hmm. for me. I mean, I still think Molly Katzen is really cool.
And did you bring her one of those barbecue tofu sandwiches?
I didn't. But I do remember that during the Q&A segment, somebody asked her about being a vegetarian. And she said that she actually wasn't.
Yeah.
Wasn't. Heard, yep. And that she had just eaten a turkey sandwich that day for lunch. Anyway,
and the person dropped dead on the spot.
Exactly. But when I went up to her and I had my book signed, I think I told her that I was in college and that I was really interested in food and blah, 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 and that I was writing about it in the, like, that I was interested in exploring food through, like, literature and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I think I followed up by sending her
and she said,
essay.
Oh, great.
And she actually wrote back to me in that handwriting, that Molly Katzen handwriting that everybody recognizes. Anyway, what a class act. I mean,
that's awesome.
Just what a kind human. Anyway, there you go.
Okay, so sometime in the 2000s, I was writing restaurant reviews for the Seattle Times, a local newspaper, and I was told about this place called Sichuan Bean Flour. And I think it no longer exists. I think there was one, it was like up north somewhere in Seattle and then moved to the east side and then closed. Anyway, what bean flour meant, and I like learned this somehow, is it is a Chinese word for tofu. It's like the character for bean and the character for flour, and particularly for silken tofu, which we'll explain what that is in a while. Probably quite a while based on how the show is going so far.
Okay.
And so like this, like that was kind of the first moment I realized, oh, like you can have a whole restaurant predicated on the idea that our tofu is really delicious and that's what you should come here for.
Wow.
And I went there and had like several different tofu dishes and I was like, okay, this is really good. Like there's something here that I just never understood before and now I'm starting to get it.
And this restaurant sadly no longer exists.
Sadly no longer exists, but there are other places in Seattle now where you can get good tofu. There's a restaurant called Northwest Tofu mm-hmm. that's both a tofu store and restaurant on Jackson Street that has all kinds of great tofu dishes.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Do you have any cookbook? I mean, like, I know that you know, there are plenty of cookbooks that are focused on tofu.
Yeah. So like the next phase in my tofu-lution.
Wow.
Let's rewind.
Okay.
So remember when I said there are like things in my life that I wish I could go back and do over again?
You can.
That was
you
one
can
of them.
Right
yeah, that's
now.
True. In podcasting, you can.
Let's do it.
Let's scrub through all our old episodes and get rid of all the embarrassing stuff. There'll be like 4 minutes of audio left.
Okay.
Was when Andrea Nguyen's cookbook, Asian Tofu, came out, maybe like the early 2010s, I think.
Okay.
And it was like for me, like the first cookbook that I read that was totally focused on tofu, not as a health food, but just like these are traditional ways to prepare tofu that are focused on celebrating the ingredient and its deliciousness. And I made a bunch of things from that book. And inspired by that book, I made tofu at home for the first and only time.
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on. I think that this is a good point for you to tell us about what that was like. But first, Matthew, hold on. We need to pause for a second.
Mm-hmm.
We need to let our listeners know. So this episode is airing on January 2nd.
Yeah.
2 weeks from today, January 16th. As you may recall, Matthew, we are doing a live show in Seattle.
I do recall.
In the basement of Dino's.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more information on that. If you go to our website, spilledmilkpodcast.com, and click on this episode, there'll be a link to buy tickets. It's bit.ly/spilledmilk10. It might be sold out by now. But
here's the thing. We need help from our listeners, listeners who will be there, as well as listeners like you who may be very far away and maybe even happy that you can't be there. Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe you want to stay away.
Maybe you heard about how we like to lick foods and yeah. then pass them on to other people.
Well, so here's the thing. We are going to do something that we've never done before
right.
at this show. We are, instead of picking one topic, we are soliciting topic ideas from listeners, and we're going to do, I think 10 topics.
10
topics as a lightning round.
45 minutes.
Yes. So we are going to do like 3 to 5 minutes per topic. Producer Abby's going to be there with a button.
Yes.
Or a buzzer, rather. A buzzer razor. Wow, it sounds like it's going to zing us.
Yeah, well, we've gotten razzed by producer Abby many a time.
She's going to be there with a buzzer
uh-huh.
to stop us.
I'm really,
so we have to move
really
on to
hoping that
a different
it's the
topic.
Buzzer from the game Taboo.
I'm hoping that it's the sound that the game Operation makes when you hit the edge of the body.
Oh, wow. That is such an odd game.
Okay, anyway, here's the thing. We want topic ideas from you, listeners. We are going to be randomly picking these topics out of a hat, and Matthew and I have to be able to talk about them for 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah, so producer Abby is going to lightly vet the cards that that she's going to write the topics on, but we could encounter almost anything in this basket of cards, and we have to be we're not going to be ready, but we have to wing it.
And here's the thing. Matthew and I do not want to know about the topics ahead of time. So please do not just post them on our general Facebook page or in the comments at our website. Here's how you should submit topic ideas.
Email topics@spilledmilkpodcast.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'll make sure that goes directly to producer Abby. Don't send her anything weird just because you know it's going directly to producer Abby.
I mean, we know that producer Abby is the object of everyone's affections, but
that's true.
But please do not send her weird stuff.
Unless
unless it's a weird topic idea.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay.
Let's talk about tofu.
Yeah. This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, take a minute and picture that thing that you've always wanted to learn.
All right, I'm picturing the thing.
Okay.
And you know, what if I get lost in the wilderness?
Well, okay, this is the thing?
This is the thing.
Oh, okay. Well, so picture learning it from someone who's literally the best at getting lost in the wilderness.
No, no, no.
In the world.
You
no?
don't understand, Molly. I want to get found in the wilderness.
Oh,
so,
okay.
And for that, I turn to Jessi Krebs, who is an internationally recognized expert on wilderness survival. She has a class on Masterclass, and she teaches like the 5 basic needs. And if you think number 1 is water, you're wrong. She teaches you how to use a knife, how to use rope, one of your most important tools in the wilderness. I don't think I'm going to get stuck in the wilderness, but if I do, I'm going to be really happy that I took this class on Masterclass.
Yeah, well, Masterclass is where you should go if you don't just want to think about learning something, but you actually want to do it with one-on-one classes with the world's best.
Yeah, if you want to learn singing from Christina Aguilera, if you want to learn shooting threes from Steph Curry, there's only one place in the world to do those things, unless you happen to know those people, which
yeah.
you don't.
Yeah, you don't. And every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk.
And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
What is tofu?
Okay. Tofu is coagulated bean curd, coagulated soy milk. So you make soy milk by grinding soybeans.
Green soybeans?
No, dried soybeans.
Okay.
Not edamame.
Okay.
So grinding soybeans with liquid and pressing out the soybeans so you have the liquid left.
Okay.
But that liquid still has lots and lots of proteins and carbohydrates and stuff dissolved in it. And just like you can coagulate milk with rennet or another coagulant, you can do the same with soy milk. And when you do, that is how you make tofu. And there are two main styles of tofu. The most common one that is sold as like a firm or extra firm tofu usually is cotton tofu. That's what's called in Japan. And that is when it's like a cheese making style process where you press out the whey and you press the curds into a block.
Okay. And so that's what most of us in the U.S. are probably most familiar with.
Yes. But there's also silken tofu, which is what you get when you coagulate the soy milk in its container and just leave it in the container and let it solidify.
Ah.
And so that's got... it's got all the whey and the curds kind of smooshed together.
Which explains why it is so much like softer, silkier,
yeah,
less
firm. Much higher water content. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's different.
Okay. And is it called, like, so if the other is cotton tofu.
Silken tofu.
Okay. Now, hold on. Now, wait. You were, you know, saying that it's called cotton tofu in Japan.
Momendofu.
But is tofu, where is it originally from?
So it is almost certainly originally from China. And boy, do we not know a lot about the history of tofu. Like I went well beyond Wikipedia. What we can say for sure is it probably goes back at least 2,000 years, but it doesn't seem to have become like popular and like mentioned in a lot of sources until somewhere around like the 9th to 11th century in China and then shortly thereafter in Japan.
It's so interesting to me when we think about like, you know, people love to talk about like artichokes. Like
love talking about artichokes. They will not shut up about these fucking thistles.
Like, how did anybody ever wind up thinking we should eat this? Like, people love to talk about, you know, like marvel at artichokes like that. I mean, I think tofu sounds, it's pretty far from the original soybean.
Oh, yeah. So first you have to make soy milk.
Well, yeah. So for somebody to think of taking the soybean, taking it presumably out of the pod, drying it, grinding it up, mixing it with water, pressing it, and then adding coagulants. Like, what foods are we inventing today? That like 2,000 years from now, people will be like, how did they come up with that one?
Oh, Flamin' Hot Cheetos. Doritos Locos Tacos.
That's true.
Those, okay. Mainly those things.
Sour Patch Kids.
Sour Patch Kids. Yeah. Sour yes. Patch Extreme Kids.
Yes. Okay. Like, all right. Well, I'm glad we figured that out. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Can you imagine like at our archaeological site, like this one right here, when they unearth this in a couple thou and... That's how the cool kids say 1,000 years. And they find like some dried up Sour Patch Kids and like, you know, like why did they have so much citric acid at this settlement?
Right. Was there some sort of an illness that was plaguing the population that can only be cured by citric acid?
For example. Yeah. And they're going to find the Sour Patch Kids. They might find like some Hubba Bubba bubble gum. That would be hard to explain.
Okay, but anyway.
Yes.
Matthew, hold on.
Okay, we were in the middle of explaining something. I was going to say, like, the one step that you would think, like, how, like, where did they get this coagulant and what was that all about?
Yeah.
So the original tofu coagulant was almost certainly seawater, which has enough of the types of salts that coagulate soy milk to work as a tofu coagulant.
So salts coagulate the proteins?
Yes.
Okay.
And like sodium chloride is not very effective for this, but calcium chloride is, and there's plenty of that in seawater and some like lake water also, I think.
That's so interesting. So when we're using cow's milk, the proteins in that usually are coagulated with an acid.
Yes. And you can, there are tofus made by coagulating with an acid. It's just like a regional variation.
Okay. Oh, this is so interesting. Okay. All right. So when you made tofu,
yeah,
tell me all about it.
So, okay. Name drop alert. So I emailed Andrea Nguyen, who was and is my colleague, food writer, but except that she's like gone on to continue publishing great books year after year.
and we made this show.
And she said, if you're interested in making tofu, I can send you a kit. And I said, yes, please. And she did. And she sent some high-quality dried soybeans and a plastic tofu press, which is really – it's just like a block of plastic, a plastic mold with like a strainer, holes in the bottom so that you can press it and strain out some of the whey.
Okay.
And it was really not very hard to do. I got the sense that this was something that would take practice to like get the end product to where I'm like, this isn't just like, wow, I made my own tofu. That's cool. To like, this is actually worth doing because it's as good or better than tofu I can buy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely an interesting experience.
Did you make silken tofu?
I made cotton tofu.
Cotton tofu. And were you able to get it to coagulate into or to, you know, to be pressed into a block?
Yes, absolutely.
And so did it taste
good?
Yeah,
it's very – yes, it did. It's really satisfying when you add the coagulant. I think she threw in some coagulant also. When you add the coagulant, like it just like boom, right away curdles because wow. You had this like smooth soy milk. And oh, by the way, the best part – this is not straight technically tofu, but like the best part of making homemade tofu is you have this pot of warm soy milk and it forms a skin on the top and you can peel this skin off and eat it. And it is one of the most delicious things in the world.
Wow.
It's called yuba in Japanese.
I've seen dried yuba. I've used it before.
Yeah.
For a recipe in Fuchsia Dunlop's book,
Every Grain of Rice. Yeah. The dried and fresh are quite different, but both very delicious.
Mm-hmm. You know, it occurs to me, it's, you know, people talk about like vegetarian cheese, right? Or
sure.
Tofu cheese. I mean, the process for making this is very much like making, I think about like when I made paneer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you're like warming milk, you're adding an acid, you're pressing the curds into a block and cutting them up into cubes. It's interesting to me. I wonder when companies market like tofu cheese, how is it just different from tofu?
I think flavorings.
Oh, okay.
Is my guess. And that's one of the advantages of tofu, especially cotton tofu, is that it takes on flavorings very readily because it's porous, as you discovered in college. You were the one who discovered this.
I did. Yeah, June was just saying to me yesterday, she was like, I don't like tofu very much. It doesn't taste like anything. And I was saying to her, well, June, here's the thing, actually. It does taste like something, but most of the time when we eat it, it takes on the flavorings of what's around it.
So this is exactly something I want to talk about, which was that I certainly at one point felt the same way.
Yeah.
And what I then, as I like discovered good tofu, like that had like a spillover effect. Okay. So a couple weeks ago, by the time you hear this, a couple months ago, I did an event at Book Larder, the community cookbook store in Seattle where producer Abby works. And I interviewed this guy named Derek Sandhouse, who wrote a book about baijiu, which is Chinese liquor. And I had never tried this before. And he talks about in the book how when he first tried it, he thought it was the worst thing he had ever had. Then, you know, sometime later, he's like, okay, like, I don't like this at all. I don't get why people drink this, but people clearly enjoy it. I want to find out why. And so he went on tasting various different kinds and then finally found one that he liked. But it wasn't just that he found one that he liked. He was then able to go back to the ones that he didn't like and identify, oh, like this is what I was supposed to get out of this. And now I can enjoy this one too.
This is ideally how humans would approach
most
all
things,
of humanity,
right? So for me, like I have had some really, really good tofu experiences, and through that, like that made me want to go back and like enjoy just supermarket tofu in a way that I couldn't before, and like I do that regularly.
Wow.
Can I tell you about some of my really good tofu experiences?
Yeah, my God, this I feel like we need to put on like we need to light. We need to sit down by candlelight.
Yeah.
We need to light something. No, but I feel like we need to put on like sort
it's
of
really
romantic
brings
music.
Out your pyromaniacal tendencies.
There needs to be like a little somebody playing the harp right now,
or a koto or a shamisen or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
But yeah, have you ever been to the Urdu harp room at Dusty Strings Music Store in Fremont?
No.
Oh man, I love it. That's my favorite music store in Seattle. It's all kinds of, they have cool electric guitars and I like to go for that reason, but they also have like dulcimers and harps. They have a fucking room full of harps.
Did you know that Brandon bought a full-sized harp recently and
this
now has it in his home?
This doesn't surprise me at all.
Right? It's so Brandon.
Yeah.
Anyway, but oh my God, it's really beautiful.
Does he know how to play it?
I think he's learning. I think he's taking harp lessons.
Where was I going with this?
Delicious tofu eating experiences.
So I went to this restaurant in Tokyo in 2012 called Ukai Tofuya. It is a tofu, like a tasting menu tofu restaurant. It's super fancy. I went by myself for lunch. I had to make a reservation like a week in advance.
What did it cost to go there for lunch? Have a tasting menu.
I think like $60.
Wow, that's still very reasonable for what I would think.
I didn't drink any alcohol. Have been much more. Most of the dishes in the tasting menu contained tofu in one way or another, but like the signature dish was, because it was summertime, was cold tofu, like freshly made tofu in like a cold dashi broth. And which like if you're not already on the tofu train, like no one's going to hear that and be like, yum, like sign me up. And I was skeptical because like it was just a big bowl of cold broth with like two scoops of tofu floating in it.
Okay.
Or like not even floating, sinking in it.
Okay.
It was so delicious.
Did you do anything really emotional, like cry?
No. Oh. I did something really emotional. I kept saying,
I can't wait to talk to Watzel and see if that's how you express all your emotions.
Yes, it is.
Like when Watzel comes home and she's had a really hard day and you're like,
Yeah, I'm super fun to live with. Yeah, and then like I lick something and pass it to her. Like, here, have a cookie.
Okay, go on.
The server came over and was like, it's good. Like, oishi. Like, you know, it was good. So that was one of my formative tofu experiences. A couple years later, we were in Osaka and had breakfast at the hotel we were staying at. And when they do the Japanese breakfast at this hotel, they have like a seasonal flavored house-made tofu. And it was kabocha squash flavored, the squash flavor was very subtle, but it was just this really good, freshly made silken tofu. And it was served with like this slotted spoon to eat it with. It was sort of like a strainer on a stick because it was so delicate. There's no way you could pick it up with chopsticks. And it was delicious. Teenager of the show, Iris, loved it also.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay. So go on, Matthew. Tell me more.
I know. So then after that, I was like, okay, like, you know, I'm not going to get tofu of that quality all the time, but now I can kind of taste the same things that I tasted in that really good freshly made tofu, even when I'm buying tofu, you know, in a plastic tub at a Wajimaya or Trader Joe's.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you do with tofu at home? What type do you buy for it? Like, I don't know. Can you like tip me off onto some brands? Because
Let me tip you off. Okay, so for silken tofu, my favorite one to buy is Morinaga Morinu Silken Tofu, and it comes in several different firmnesses, and it comes in a box. Hmm. And opening the box is kind of fun because it's a Tetra Pak box, and the tofu curdles, like, you know, it firms in this box because it's a silken tofu. The box comes with like three-step instructions for opening it.
Oh my gosh. It,
so like you
pop the
pop
corners,
up the little tabs and you cut those, and then you cut across, and then you cut off one of the tabs at the bottom to vent it so you can slide the block of tofu out.
And so silken firm tofu, you're going to be able to cut it into cubes, but it's still going to have that silky, really silky texture.
Yes, it's still very fragile. Okay. So this is my favorite one to use for mapo tofu.
Okay, and will you, for those of us who haven't made mapo tofu, would you tell us a little bit about like the characteristic flavorings of it?
Yeah, so it is a Sichuanese dish that is made with Sichuan fermented chili bean paste, doubanjiang, and Sichuan peppercorn. And so it is very spicy and numbing and a little funky. Mm-hmm. And it usually has meat, but it doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. It's very delicious. One of my favorite things to make.
And it's fairly saucy.
Very saucy, yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then what else do you do with this particular type of tofu?
Okay. The other thing I love making with silken tofu is...
Every time you say, I love making. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know how well I did in college with all the lovemaking.
I made this joke like 200 episodes ago.
But it was time for it to come back around. Like...
I've been sitting on it for months when you're like, I love making, and I'm just sitting over here quietly. Okay, go on.
Yeah.
God, I'm such a child.
No, oh, no, it's good.
Idiot.
This is, I know we've said this before, but this is how we stay young forever, by never doing anything mature.
Okay, go on. Okay.
So, oh, the other thing is hiyayakko. Hiyayakko is a like summer tofu dish that is very popular in Japan. I mean, all times of year. You can like order it in any bar in Japan, kind of. It is cubes of silken tofu that are just kind of like lightly garnished with fish flakes, katsuobushi, and grated ginger and scallions and soy sauce.
Served cold.
Served cold.
That sounds delightful in the summertime.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, you know, there is a moment when if you've had it and enjoyed it, you'll, like, come to a moment where you're like, this is the thing I need to have right now.
What about cotton tofu?
Okay, cotton tofu. There are a couple of things that I like to do with that, too. Number one favorite is bear paw tofu, which is in Fuchsia Dunlop's book, Every Grain of Rice.
Fantastic.
And I know is a favorite of producer Abby's also.
Oh, I've never had it.
So what
Even
you
though
do
I
is
have this book. I've never noticed it.
Definitely make this recipe.
Okay.
It's a little more work than mapo tofu because you need to par fry the tofu. So you take the cotton tofu, you cut it up into square, like small squares. Mm-hmm. Like a centimeter thick or so. Mm-hmm. And then you fry them in oil and you set them aside. And then you stir fry the fried tofu pieces with like Sichuanese seasonings, like chili bean paste and like long lengths of scallion and a little bit of soy sauce, maybe a little bit of vinegar. Mm-hmm. And it's so good that the tofu gets like this like juicy texture.
Mm.
It's still like a little bit crispy from the frying, but it soaks up all of the saucy seasonings.
Yum.
It's so good.
Okay.
Also one of Teenager of the Show Iris's favorites. And yudofu, which I've only actually made a couple of times, but is like the thing to do, like if at least Japanese style, if you have some good tofu that you really want to highlight. And like if you live in a city of any appreciable size, there is probably a local tofu factory. Mm-hmm. That is making tofu, and like that's the brand you should look for. Tofu brands are not super national.
What about, you know, tofu from Trader Joe's or from like your local supermarket? Like, do you feel good about those? Are they good?
I feel okay about them.
Okay.
Oh, I never got to what yudofu is. It's really just like a tofu simmered in broth.
All right.
Like a tofu hot pot
kind of. And so would you use cotton tofu?
You can use either, but yeah, probably cotton tofu.
Okay. So do you ever buy cotton tofu at Trader Joe's?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a tofu that's been sitting around in a plastic tub is never going to be like the one that you want to highlight as like, you know, this is my tofu statement. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to make it into mapo tofu or bear paw tofu or something else where it's going to be highly seasoned, it's going to be great.
Awesome. Okay.
Like, yeah, definitely do continue buying those tofus. Like, don't stop like you were going to just because you were listening to our show.
So I think that we should link to Andrea Nguyen's book, Asian Tofu.
Oh, yeah.
On the website. We should also link to Fuchsia Dunlop's Every Grain of Rice and probably Fuchsia Dunlop's newer book, The Food of Sichuan.
Yeah. And I think probably so the mapo tofu recipe I make is from Andrea Nguyen's book, and I'm pretty sure he's on her blog. I think we've linked to it before. We'll do it again.
Yeah.
That's at spilledmilkpodcast.com. And it's possible the bear paw tofu recipe is online too, but by Fuchsia Dunlop's books.
Oh my gosh. It's all of these books are fantastic.
We still have to talk about stinky tofu. So stinky tofu is especially popular in Taiwan. Well, the thing I think is funny about stinky tofu.
And I'm aware that I'm really being I'm being dumb here. Tell me about stinky tofu.
Well, no, I don't think you are, because I think even like aficionados of stinky tofu are kind of like happy in a like braggy sort of way when they hear that someone can't handle it.
Oh, okay.
Like, so, you know, stinky tofu is not. I think it's different from most stinky cheeses in the sense that. So first of all, it is a marinated tofu preparation where you take like a cotton tofu and marinate it in some kind of funky brine, often for quite a while, and then usually fry it.
Ah, That is not what I was expecting.
Very popular in Taiwan, but also in other parts of China.
And so what would make the brine funky?
It could have like fermented fish in it, you know, fermented vegetables, all kinds of stuff.
That actually sounds pretty good.
Right. So it is good, but stinky tofu, like when you have a stinky cheese, like often you'll say like, okay, but if you can get past the smell of the camembert or the epoisse or whatever, like it's really just kind of mild and like, mm-hmm. you know, and what's not to like. Stinky tofu is not like that at all. Mm. Like it is profoundly stinky, and then the flavor is like even stinkier usually.
Interesting.
You know, there is nothing euphemistic about the name.
Okay.
Or like, no, there's nothing like, what's the opposite of euphemistic? It's not an overstatement.
Okay. And did you eat this when you were in Taiwan?
I did eat it when I was in Taiwan. I ate one piece and I was like, I think I could learn to like this, but it would take some more tries.
Okay. Fair enough.
But I mean, it's like the Chinese liquor that Derek Sandhaus figured out how to make himself like. I think with exposure to stinky tofu in the right context, I'm sure I would become an insufferable stinky tofu person who's like, you got to try this.
I think it's that way with so many different strongly flavored
absolutely.
Things like around the world. I mean, for instance, June just, so last night I took her with me to the grocery store and I was buying some cheese, among other things. And I was really having trouble deciding among these different cheeses. And so I was trying to sniff them through the plastic wrap, which is a fool's errand. But anyway.
You know what I do? I lick them and put them back.
She couldn't even like tolerate the smell through the plastic wrap. And I know that there was a time when I was the very same way. But through like repeated exposure, as you'll hear on next week's episode, and through like the sheer desire to like learn about this food.
You know what I just realized?
Like, I think now I love it.
I think next week's episode is actually our 10th anniversary episode. And the one that we've been teasing is actually 2 weeks from now.
Oh.
That's cool. No, it's all happening.
It's cool. It's all a celebration of stink.
Yep. Okay. Next week's episode is also stinky?
People love to stay tuned to find out what it is.
The 10th anniversary episode is a celebration of our own funk that we have been fermenting for 10 years.
Oh my God. I'm a little bit scared to tape that episode.
Me too. You can find us at spilledmilkpodcast.com and at facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast. You know, we didn't talk about Indonesian tofu at all, and there's a big tradition of tofu in Indonesia because I don't know very much about it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we would love to hear like what you are doing with tofu beyond what we talked about.
Yeah, we really only mentioned four dishes here. Plus my hippie tofu sandwich.
Yeah, I mean, that's really like the thing that most people think of first.
Yeah.
Around the world.
I would also love to hear if people have like hippie tofu preparations that they feel really strongly about. That like really
definitely.
Hold up. You know, even if you're no longer a hippie.
Yeah. But you should probably still be a hippie.
Probably. At least we should all be hippies.
Yeah. At least in terms of the sandals and the political beliefs.
Yeah.
So what else? Our producer is Abby Circatella. You can find us on Instagram @ Spilled Milk Podcast.
Ooh, please send us your topic ideas for our January 16th live show. Send those ideas to topics@ spilledmilkpodcast.com.
Yep. We'll catch him in our secret inbox.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't feel good about that. And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk. We love making you laugh.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton. Don't send tofu. Either don't actually like send tofu into our inbox or send that as a topic because we're doing
that
right now.
Oh my God,
right
that was now. Such a dad joke. Like when my dad used to say we should fax things
exactly.
to my mom. Like fax slices of cake and stuff.